So let's talk about this first year. You know, obviously, when you were in the running for this job, you assessed the situation that you might be coming into. There have to have been some surprises, pleasant and not so. Let's talk about the pleasant surprises first that you've had after being here for a year.
Pleasant surprises, first and foremost, the staff. Great staff. If you were paying attention, not that you had to, but there hasn't been upheaval on the staff. I moved some folks around. It was really fine-tuning, but that's a testament to my predecessors. I think Frank and David Neely and folks who came before me have done an excellent job with the staff. We have terrific people working for the city. And so I'm happy to say, you haven't seen an exodus. You've just seen really just a minor shuffling in that regard. So couldn't be happier to have the folks that I've got working for the city.
Talk to me about the reshuffle, because you brought your former police chief into the administration of the city itself, and basically overseeing first responders. But tell me what your thought process was in creating that kind of a profile.
Well, if you look at the folks in the city manager's office, I've got Chuck Gilman, who's my deputy city manager. He's a former director of Public Works. Jeff Capps, you mentioned, former police chief, is assistant city manager. And my other assistant is Jeff Kirsten, finance director. So really didn't plan it that way, but I've got sort of in my immediate grasp there in the city manager's office, I've got public works, public safety, and finance. We enjoy each other's company. We usually, you know, poke fun at each other first thing in the morning. We enjoy our meetings. It's fun. We had a meeting discussing annexation one morning, not always the most pleasant of subjects, but I remember afterwards having had a few laughs during that and come up with a very good game plan to move forward with that process and approaching the council and trying to educate the citizenry, but enjoying that to the point that I remember remarking on it later that night to the fire chief that it was an enjoyable meeting. But something that I've noticed is that we laugh in management team meetings, you know, and if you can't approach governance with some semblance of humor, then it's kind of a losing proposition. So,
sure.
But I've got a terrific team. They work hard. They make me look good. God knows they're smarter than I am. And so I'm very lucky in that regard. And remember, all those folks are already there.
Kelly Templin here this morning as the city manager, about a year on the job now. On the other side of the ledger, there were probably some things after you dug into it that you kind of went, this is something that really needs to be addressed quickly because I'm not pleased with the direction it's going. What falls in that category?
Well, the first sort of monumental decision was hiring a fire chief. And a big believer in hiring internally. We had two candidates for that job. That job, or that process, pardon me, had started prior to my arrival. And after assessing that and talking to both of the candidates, I went with the internal candidate, Eric Hurt, because that vacancy had been there really perhaps too long. And again, very pleased with what Eric's done with the department. That was probably the first challenge. The other one was really approaching budget and talking to Jeff Kirsten and talking to the staff about how we could make that as painless as possible. So dove into that fairly early. I trusted Jeff Kirsten to help me, I guess, streamline that process as much as possible. And that is a very steep learning curve. When you've got a $250 million budget, 900 employees, that's drinking from the proverbial fire hose.
Well, tell me, when did you go, we have to have a tax increase. It has to happen.
You know, you don't have to have a tax increase, but there were consequences if we didn't change the revenue stream a little bit. We have one of the lowest tax rates in the state for any comparable city, and the city was in the habit of adopting the effective tax rate. So we were sort of foregoing any advantage to that. So it was a bit of a perfect storm that we had fracking, you know, arrive here. The oil patch started to hire line workers and folks with the city. They could pay better. And I had no way to be able to adjust many of those salaries. So there for a while, we couldn't get engineers to come to work here because Houston and, you know, again, the oil patch was so hungry. So we did have some challenges in that regard. We laid out the options for the council, and I think they took the tougher route, but I believe the correct route. So, again, we tried to educate the citizens as to, you know, what we intended to do with that money. And a lot of it was with regard to mobility, public safety, that sort of thing. But I was very pleased with what I heard back from the citizenry. I think council, again, stepped up and took the harder path, but that was a very interesting process. And again, learned tremendous amount about the city, the history of the city, and the trajectory of the city. Going through the budget is like reading somebody's diary, and so that was arduous, but very educational.
All right, let's Kelly Templin, City Manager of College Station, joining us. We talked to Bill Flores earlier this morning about this, since he came from the oil industry, and obviously we are going to have exploration within the city limits of Bryan and College Station.
That's correct.
But now the energy prices are falling.
That's right.
Now, what does that do? Because what you've promised is as small a footprint and as small an imprint as possible, but if energy prices go down, these people are going to back off on their exploration right now. How will that impact this
situation? Well, we're having those discussions internally. We're watching the oil market. We're watching the gas market. Oil prices are falling. Natural gas prices are falling. Of course, that is a benefit as far as our energy cost and consumption. But it also, you're right, it's going to curtail exploration to a point. I don't know what that point is. And that was a discussion we were having yesterday. Found a couple of papers on that as to when that would start to curtail exploration in the Eagle Ford. We're sort of at the very northern tail end of the Eagle Ford here in Brazos County. But I don't know. That's something I need to learn more about. And what I probably ought to do is have a discussion with Representative Flores about that to get his perspective on it. But again, we're having those discussions right now. I want a perfect medium where they're not hiring my people away in droves.
But from a timeline standpoint, I mean, your citizenry, maybe not as quietly as you'd like, but they are understanding you want to take this opportunity. But if, in fact, it's not going to happen now, if it's going to happen a year and a half from now,
right,
there are going to be some people who will continue to be unhappy about this.
Well, that's correct. I mean, this is there's always an imposition. You know, when you have something of this scale arrive in proximity to your home or your property or what, and I understand that perfectly. There are a lot of unknowns. I've learned a lot about fracking. I've learned about the history of fracking. And that's, again, another steep learning curve. Honestly, I thought I had a year, 18 months before that really arrived in force on the doorstep, and it came a lot sooner than we imagined it would. So it's been, again, a steep learning curve for everybody. We're reviewing our oil and gas regulations right now. As a matter of fact, I've been through the second draft this week. So we're trying to modernize that so that we can have as little impact as entirely possible. We're working with a gentleman who has been in the oil and gas industry for 30-plus years, who's an expert in that regard. So, again, we're trying to do that. That's the problem. We had intended to review these regulations, and it just came a lot sooner than we could have imagined.
Sure. So, your background obviously is in development. That's something that you want to continue to be active in, as best I can tell. I'd like to talk about a specific area of College Station. That would be the Tower Point area.
Yes.
Now, this is something that is kind of a work in progress. I mean, it's organic. You know what's going to go in there now, but a perfect example is the Sawgrass Steakhouse,
yes,
which was built. And so their parking lot gets full, and then there's street parking. But you're going to have a hotel that's about to go in right there. They're going to have some parking needs and desires. And now you start talking about widths of streets, what happens as far as people just being able to move in, whether it's emergency vehicles or not. Do you have to go back and rethink the way that things like that are laid out?
You have to constantly rethink those things. That is a continuous feedback loop there, because those dynamics are always changing. You know, I was here 12, 14 years ago when they started just talking about that road, that project, what have you, and I departed, the recession showed up, and nothing happened for a long time. The folks down on the south end of town wanted a restaurant, and it showed up, and boy, do they patronize it.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is Sawgrass, you mentioned. They meet the parking requirements for the city. So I think even they were shocked at the turnout there. I sort of make a point to avoid restaurants in that first week till they settle down a little
sure
bit. But driving past that location, I was always amazed that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Of course, because I deal with the aforementioned budget, I was very pleased to see that parking lot full. But they had sort of a staging area there, and they were very surprised by the patronage of the restaurant. So they at one time told their folks, hey, park in the staging area, which was unpaved. And so we had to approach them and say, you know, you can't do that. So that's been a bit of a shuffle.
And that's not their land, I presume. They don't own that area back there.
I don't believe it is.
Because I figure you'd pave it if you owned it.
But well, anyway. And there's a fence there now. So we approached them I guess, you know, quietly to resolve that. We didn't want to go after a new businessman being, you know, in a heavy-handed fashion. But they were good to work with there. We're pleased with the response. I guess, you know, again, having to deal with the budget, I'd rather have a parking problem than not have a parking problem.
Sure.
But no, you're right. We are looking at Tower Point. We're looking at regulations across the board in a constant fashion because we're not the experts in you know, the amount of parking that a restaurant needs or that any particular type of retail needs. So we have to listen to them. We have to look at their other developments. We have to try to kind of factor that in. I don't want vacant parking lots. I don't want oversized detention. I don't want non-point source pollution. So I think it's wise to listen to the citizens, listen to the developer, listen to the individual uses there, and come to that happy medium. Yeah. So
I just have to say that there aren't that many places where you have, if you will, a freestanding restaurant that can't have the opportunity of shared parking.
Yes.
And there are a few. The one right by Bank of America on University Drive, that's an Asian restaurant right there. I think they have a locked-in parking lot pretty well, and maybe Jimmy John's across the street. But basically, when you look at a development like Tower Point that is, again, still a work in progress, this could end up being a bigger problem than it really is now. And now I think it's an area of concern. So when you go in and put together your development code for the city, do you start taking a look at these brand new shopping centers that will have that many cars in there? Maybe we are going to need wider streets. Maybe we will have to enhance the parking and have more spaces out there and available.
These examples have a pretty big impact on the staff. That is, they take note of these things, and we like to learn those lessons. Perhaps that wasn't always the case, but we talk about these sort of living examples. And again, having been out there, I showed up one day and I watched the staff come out of the restaurant and move their cars. So, again, you know, I'm glad they have a parking problem. We need to learn this lesson. Of course, I'm wondering, too, whether after the newness wears off, whether the problem will, you know.
But we don't know what else is going to end up out there, too.
No, that's
the other thing. You're one signed deal away from having another problem someplace else.
Well, but you mentioned shared parking. I've done those. I've worked out those agreements in other jurisdictions and what have you, and they work well. Some franchises don't like to share parking, and they're famous for that. They like to show that they've got ample parking on Christmas Eve. But again, in order to get the biggest bang for our buck as far as return on for ad valorem, for sales tax and everything, it's nice to have some sway between those two. But a lot of that has to do with the franchise, the developer, what have you. We try to work those deals, and that's going to be an interesting example, there's no doubt.
City, the school district is building yet another campus right there on Fitch, if you haven't seen it. They started moving dirt, I guess, last couple of weeks.
Right.
We were talking off the air before we went on. The close proximity of all of the schools certainly tells us something about what the future growth pattern of the city is.
Yes.
Tell me the challenges that you have in trying to dovetail with the school district as they continue to grow.
Well, I have to say, we have an excellent relationship with the school district. And what I've encouraged Eddie before now, Clark Ely, now is to come to us as soon as possible, even if you're just looking at a piece of property, so that we can say, here will be our challenges as far as roads, infrastructure, access, those kinds of things. So I think that relationship is going to get better and better. The growth of the school district mirrors the growth of the city. And I've got two kids in College Station Independent School District. I know they do an excellent job, and we need to continue to support them so they can do the best job that they can. So we will continue. I think if you talk to Clark or any member of the board, you'd find out that this latest elementary school was probably the smoothest process they've had, at least as far as the city is concerned. We want to continue to make that better and better. But again, it requires joint planning. And I was telling a reporter last week that the success of the school district is absolutely necessary for our economic development, for our continued success. So we need to support the schools, and we will continue to do so. There are always going to be challenges, and their current growth is a serious challenge for them right now. And again, we're going to continue to support them. Public safety, infrastructure, access, all of those issues. We just need to plan better further out. And that's just a challenge because it would have been difficult for them coming out of the recession and the growth we had to anticipate this level of growth. Nobody anticipated that recession, and so I don't think anybody anticipated this level of recovery.
Kelly Templin joining us. He's the city manager of College Station. I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Obviously, you want your utilities to be able to be as self-supportive and self-sufficient as possible, and
yes,
so you have the rates to do that. What people may not understand is you basically, by law, have a limited amount of space that College Station utilities can serve.
That's correct.
And you can't expand it. I mean, well, you could, but the chances of it getting expanded would be an infringement on an existing utility. So as the city continues to grow, you'll have development that will happen outside the purview of College Station utilities.
That's correct.
But you're going to continue to have a need to bluntly raise rates. You're going to get to the point where you're not going to be able to add more customers because you will have reached the boundaries of your service area.
Yes and no. We're looking at issues right now. But believe it or not, there's a lot of undeveloped property within the city of College Station. Well, depends on how you define a lot, but there's a good number of acres there. So tracks that people have bypassed in the past because they were challenging, there was floodplain, what have you. They're taking a second look at those with land prices and what have you. So I think we're going to see infill. We're also going to see redevelopment. You know, we had somebody cold call us and say, hey, we want to put 16 stories in Northgate on what currently is one story. So you're going to see those densities increase. So a lot of that market's going to be is going to change internally.
But those infrastructures are going to cost money to go from one to 16, and then how do you finance that?
No, that's correct. There's no doubt about it. It's, again, difficult to anticipate that, especially with what used to be a relatively small town on the prairie. We have to change our entire model. But I pay those utility bills, and so I feel that pain, no joke. We have to find the proper path forward, and you can't just raise those rates forever just to finance new development. That's a new development needs to, as much as possible, pay for itself. And as taxpayers, you know, we individually at the city understand and believe that as well. So it's not just a matter of raising rates. We have to approach that a little differently. CSU with regard to electricity and everything like that, we're anticipating a new electrical contract in January. We're hoping we're going to be able to, you know, have an impact on rates eventually and what have you. So we're being smarter about that. Again, lessons learned moving forward. We're not a small town anymore. So a lot of our thinking has changed. And I think you're going to like the direction that we take as far as utilities and what have you. But again, we pay very close attention to this. We're surrounded by rural water authorities. BTU surrounds us to the south. So you're right. We have a relatively small service area. And as we continue to grow, whether it's to the south or east or west, we're going to be dealing with utilities that are outside the control of the city of College Station.
I'm impressed with BTU. They put in automated meters. College Station doesn't have those. Is that on the horizon?
Yes, it is. That's a philosophical issue there, whether some of those automated meters, and I really can't speak to the Bryan experience, but some of the
automated... Well, I can. You know, a remote control, and I can turn on a meter. Mm-hmm. I don't have to have anybody come out.
Yes.
Now, I understand there's a lot of concerns about that. It's been controversial from when they first hit the market. But having said that.
No. You're right. There was some controversy. I think some of that was overstated. I think some of the reliability of some of those early models was an issue. That's really going to help us where we're a relatively hemmed in area where we can't grow forever and ever and ever. But that's something actually that's coming back to the council shortly where we're looking at that automated process. We were waiting really for prices to fall because those early implementations were very, very expensive. That is going to be a huge capital issue. What we don't want to do is switch out all those meters and foist that price difference on the customers. So, you know, on top of what we just talked about. So, again, I think the cost and impact to the customer is our primary concern there. It's going to be a capital cost. We will make that transition. It's just a matter of when.
Sure. That's kind of what I'm interested in. Are there some things of import that we haven't touched on today?
There is so much going on at the city that, this is what I tell students, the best and worst part of my job is I never know what I'm going to encounter in the course of any given day. But we are having industry drop in on us from, you know, California and parts east and west, and people are hearing about College Station. It's challenging right now because my economic development director position is vacant, so I'm handling that.
But you enjoy that.
I do, no doubt about it. But it's very interesting how people become aware of the city of College Station. Some of them have read about us in the Wall Street Journal, and some of them have salesmen that are dating Aggies on the West Coast. And
whatever it takes, right?
that Aggie connection works for us time and time again. So, no, it's again, it's a bit of a challenge, but again, it goes back to that growth. It's never dull, and I I never have a problem getting up and coming to work. It's always fun. It's always challenging.
Mm-hmm. Well, I saved the hardest question for last, and it's on average, how many mornings a week do you eat breakfast at home?
I usually don't eat breakfast.
Oh, okay. So. Oh, never mind. All right, then the last one. What was the last app you downloaded?
The last app I downloaded was the Visit Aggieland app, as a matter of fact.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes. I don't know that I'm the most tech-savvy guy in the world, but I'm told that continuously by my children, but... No, that was the last one.
Oh, that's no fun. You can't play that in the middle of a meeting. I mean, that's not any fun.
I don't have a single game on my phone. I don't play that.
What kind of a city manager are you? Thanks for the time this morning.
Enjoyed it.
It's Kelly Templin. He's the city manager of College Station.